Another message from de Gaulle to new President Lyndon Johnson pledged the faithful and confident friendship of France for the United States of America. Even across the Iron Curtain, messages of sympathy are being expressed. East Germany's communist leader, Walter Ulbricht, announced that he had learned the news of the president's death with sadness and with deep indignation. Ulbricht expressed sympathy for the American people who had lost what he called one of the most outstanding statesmen. Our neighbors to the north have expressed extreme sorrow and dismay at the assassination of President Kennedy. That reaction has been summed up for us by CBS newsman Peter Sturzberg in Ottawa.
The Canadian House of Commons adjourned minutes after it met this afternoon as a mark of grief at the death of President Kennedy. The Canadian flag atop the Parliament buildings was lowered to half-mast. Prime Minister Lester Pearson announced President Kennedy's death to the House when he was handed a bulletin while he was making a statement expressing the feeling of all of us of shock and grief at the news of the attempt on the life of the President of the United States. Mr. Pearson stopped and then said, "I've just been informed that President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. A gasp went up from the crowded benches in the House. The Canadian Prime Minister went on, "A heartbreaking tragedy has occurred. The world can ill afford at this time in our history to lose a man of his courage." The former Conservative Prime Minister, John Diefenbaker, whose relations with Mr. Kennedy had not been the best, declared that a tribune of freedom has gone. This is Peter Sturzberg in Ottawa.
Back at our CBS News headquarters in New York, the White House has announced that President Johnson will make his first statement as chief executive at Andrews Air Force Base when the presidential jet arrives from Dallas about 6:15, roughly 45 minutes from now. After the new president makes his statement, he will fly to the White House aboard a helicopter to meet with Secretary of Defense McNamara and McGeorge Bundy, the special assistant to the late President Kennedy on national security affairs. A White House spokesman says that Johnson will confer at the White House at 8 o'clock this evening with Democratic and Republican leaders of the House and the Senate. We perhaps should report once more that Governor Connally of Texas, who was seriously wounded in the assassination episode this afternoon, is considered to be, although in serious condition, not in critical condition. He underwent surgery, and the doctors say that from all indications, he will make a complete recovery.
Alan, we were hearing a few moments ago from Peter Sturzberg about the sense of shock and alarm in Ottawa, and now we understand that Alex Kendrick is back on the line from London to tell us on the tell us something about the latest British reaction there. Alex?
Yes, I'm here, Dallas. As this long night moves on over here, the presses of Fleet Street have begun to roll with tomorrow morning's papers, and the reactions, comments, and tributes are now pouring in and piling up, as you have heard over there. But before I go into that, there's a family note. Mrs. Kennedy's sister Lee, the Princess Radziwill, who was deeply shocked by what happened, she heard about it by a phone call from America, is flying to the United States in the morning. And among the comments now, the Archbishop of Canterbury, who of course is Anglican, said tonight, "I am deeply grieved by the death of President Kennedy. He was a statesman of Christian ideals whose service to his fellows was inspired by his faith in God, and the world will be the poorer for his death and the better for his great example." Also, in addition to the solemn requiem mass that will be said here at the cathedral in London, the great bell of the Westminster Cathedral will be tolled every minute for 1 hour between 11 a.m. and 12 noon tomorrow. Now, the political world of Britain, of course, has had the deepest shock at the president's death, and both houses of Parliament, which were in adjournment when the news came, will be meeting again on Monday after a weekend recess, and that meeting will evidently turn into a heartfelt session of tribute to the president. The leaders of all three parties obviously want to give expression to their feelings about the president. And while waiting for the prime minister to give his message to the nation, the new British Foreign Secretary, Mr. R.A. Butler, sent a message to Secretary of State Dean Rusk, his opposite number in America, saying that he was deeply grieved by the tragic news which dominates our lives this evening. President Kennedy has been universally admired and respected in Britain as one of the outstanding political leaders of our century. We sorrow with you over the irreparable loss, for his death deprives us no less than you of an inspiring leader of the free nation. And there have been other comments from political leaders here. The leader of the Liberal Party, he was Joe Grimmett, said he was not only a great president of the United States, he was a great leader and fighter for many things in which we all believe, for freedom, for equality between races, for the values which all democracy upholds. Now, right across the Irish Channel from Britain is the country of Ireland, which the president visited, as you recall, during the summer. And Ireland has literally been stunned tonight by the news of the president's death. Television and cinema programs there were interrupted for the announcement of the news, and a great many people, it's understood, have been calling people, their relatives in America to find out more details, and some of the president's cousins in County Wexford is now trying to arrange to get to the funeral. President De Valera of Ireland, who was host to President Kennedy in June, also expressed his grief in a message of condolence to Mrs. Kennedy. He said that he was speaking for himself and for his nation. He said that the sympathy of Ireland went out to Mrs. Kennedy and that the heart of the nation was with her in her great grief. Prime Minister of Northern Ireland, who happened to be in London tonight, also sent a message of condolence to the president's brother, Robert Kennedy, the attorney general. And just a small personal note again, London School of Economics was having a dance tonight, the students' union, and they stopped the dance on hearing of the death. President Kennedy was a student there for a short time back in 1939. Also, as the newspapers begin pouring out from the presses of Fleet Street, some of the editorials have now come to hand, and one of the most outspoken is from the Liverpool Daily Post. It quotes Disraeli, the famous Prime Minister of Britain in the 19th century, saying that assassination has never changed the course of history, declared Disraeli, with the sublime confidence of the Victorian high noon. Can we be so confident now? President Kennedy has been called the symbol of a new age, an age of young men and liberal ideas. But he was more than the symbol. He was the spearhead of that age's attack, and against him was ranged all the entrenched conservatism of his own country and the world. Who will carry on his fight after the damnable, wicked destruction of yesterday? There will be plenty to offer themselves, but hardly another of his caliber. Liverpool Daily Post. And so it goes. There will be comments from all the leading papers as the night goes on, and all of them sound the same note, the note of tragedy, of a terrible blow that has been struck not only in America, but for the entire world.
Well, I'm sure, Alex, that those sentiments expressed by the Liverpool Daily Post and all the other newspapers in England are fully shared by everyone in this country, and as you say, by everyone else around the world. We've already been getting a flood of reaction from behind the Iron Curtain. The Russians, according to Stu Novins, were absolutely stunned, almost beyond words, when they heard about it.
Well, there's a note of that kind here, too. Although it's rather late tonight, almost 11 o'clock here, the American Embassy is staying open tonight so that people can come in and write messages of regret and sympathy at tables which have been specially set up. And businessmen and students and natives of the Commonwealth, Americans visiting Europe, and all sorts of people have just come in off the streets, packed the hall of the embassy, and are signing the book there and sending messages of regret to America.
That's a very touching note, Alex. Well, we'll be back to you later on. Thank you very much for that latest report on the reaction in England and elsewhere in the United Kingdom to the assassination of the president.
We interrupt briefly for a special bulletin from the WCCO Radio News Bureau regarding a cancellation of importance in our region. The Minnesota-Wisconsin football game tomorrow afternoon in Minneapolis has been called off because of the assassination of the president. University of Minnesota officials announced just moments ago that President O. Meredith Wilson, in consultation with the president of the University of Wisconsin, had made the decision. They said the game may be made up later. Repeating, the Minnesota-Wisconsin football game, scheduled tomorrow in Minneapolis, has been called off. Now we return to our CBS News coverage in New York.
Before we go back to CBS News, Dick, I'd like to pass along some meeting cancellations, meetings which have been called off because of the tragic event of this day. St. Michael's Ukrainian Orthodox Church at 4th Street Northeast and 5th Avenue, special service tonight, 7 p.m., canceled. A memorial service this evening at 7:30 p.m. at the Congregational Church in Anoka. May I repeat that first announcement? St. Michael's Ukrainian Orthodox Church, 4th Street Northeast and 5th Avenue, will have a special service tonight at 7 p.m. These are notices of special services. St. Peter's AME Church at 4th Avenue and 41st Street South will hold a special memorial service at 7:30 this evening. St. Peter's Lutheran Church in Edina, a memorial service at 7 p.m. this evening. Hope Lutheran Church at Nokomis Park will hold a prayer service at 8 o'clock this evening. And here are some cancellations. The Simley-Randolph basketball game at Randolph, Minnesota tonight is canceled, and the St. Vincent's Osseo PSA dance at Crystal Knights of Columbus Hall has been canceled, scheduled for tonight. Here are some more church services which will be held this evening. High Requiem Mass, St. Andrew's Church at Granite Falls, Minnesota, at 7 this evening. Holy Communion, Episcopal Church of St. John the Evangelist, Portland and Kent in St. Paul, at 7:30 this evening. A special service will be held at the Shalom Tabernacle at 2054 James Avenue North in Minneapolis at 8 o'clock this evening, and a memorial service at the Knox Presbyterian Church at 4747 Lindale Avenue South in Minneapolis will be held at 7:30 p.m. We repeat, the Minnesota-Wisconsin Big Ten football game scheduled for tomorrow at Memorial Stadium in the Twin Cities has been called off. The Wisconsin-Minnesota game called off. The Vikings-Lions game for Sunday will be played. The Vikings-Lions game for Sunday will be played. General Manager Larry Haig of WCCO Radio announced that the entire regular scheduled programs on WCCO is being preempted for this special memorial broadcast. The broadcast will continue for the balance of the day. CCO temperature in the Twin Cities is 30 degrees. The wind from the northwest at 27 miles an hour, gusting to 32. Relative humidity is 72. Barometer 29.72 inches and rising rapidly. And the sky is cloudy. The time is 18 minutes before 5 o'clock. We return now to CBS Radio, the special memorial service, and broadcasts of today's tragic event are now in progress.
This report is coming to you from a CBS reporter in Santa Monica, California.
Back at the CBS News headquarters in New York, we now have the taped excerpt of the statement of shock expressed by New York's Governor Nelson Rockefeller. Let's hear that from our tape room.
This is a shocking and terrible tragedy for the nation and the world. Mrs. Rockefeller and I join with all New Yorkers and every American in extending heartfelt sympathy to Mrs. Kennedy and the President's family. May God grant strength and guidance to Lyndon Johnson as he assumes his grave responsibilities under these tragic circumstances. The prayers of all of us will be with him. I have proclaimed for the state of New York a 30-day period of mourning, and I have directed that all state offices shall be closed on the day of the president's funeral.
New York's Governor Nelson Rockefeller, as he expressed shock at the assassination of President Kennedy. President Lyndon Johnson will make his first statement as the nation's new chief executive at Andrews Air Force Base when the presidential jet arrives from Dallas in just about a half an hour from now. And after that statement, President Johnson will fly to the White House aboard a helicopter, where he will meet with Defense Secretary McNamara and McGeorge Bundy, who was special assistant to President Kennedy on national security affairs. Later this evening, the new president will confer with both Democratic and Republican leaders of the House and the Senate. At the time of the president's death, a red, white, and blue presidential plane was flying over the Pacific, heading for Tokyo, carrying Secretary of State Dean Rusk and five other Kennedy cabinet members to Tokyo for a meeting. The word was received of the president's death from our Pacific military commander, Admiral Harry Felt, who called the plane by radio telephone and gave the first word of President Kennedy's assassination. Secretary of State Rusk, upon hearing the news, said simply, "We are turning around." And the plane did turn around and has flown back to Honolulu. And soon the presidential party will be back on its way to Washington for the funeral.
Inevitably, Alan, people will be turning their minds back to the events of 1960 when Lyndon Johnson fought so hard and so vigorously for the Democratic presidential nomination, only to lose out in the end to the man whom he has now succeeded because of the assassination of John Kennedy. Mr. Kennedy's election in 1960 was by the closest popular vote margin of any election in this century. Republican leaders at the time said that Lyndon Johnson's effectiveness in holding the South played a large part in the defeat of the Republican ticket headed by Vice President Richard M. Nixon and Henry Cabot Lodge, who had resigned from his post at the United Nations in order to make the race. The electoral vote in November 1960 was 300 for Kennedy and Johnson, 223 for Nixon and Lodge, 269 were needed to elect. Mr. Johnson had been mentioned as a possible presidential candidate long before he actually became one in 1960. There was widespread speculation in 1954, in Washington and elsewhere, that he was, in fact, aiming at the White House. But Senator Johnson scoffed at the idea then, and he said, "Talk of my being a potential candidate is a lot of foolishness. I have no interest, no ambition in that direction. I am conscious of my limitations. I think it's fair to say that nobody but my mama ever thought I'd get as far as I did." But the talk persisted, and his presidential stock took a dramatic upsurge in 1956 when Texas voters gave him a landslide victory over Governor Allen Shivers in a battle for control of the Democratic Party in that state. That was 1 year after Mr. Johnson had suffered a fairly severe heart attack, which took him out of action for several weeks. But later on, he staged a complete recovery from that heart attack, and since then, there has been no sign of anything but good health on the part of the vice president. In any event, what happened in Texas was shortly before the Democratic National Convention was held in Los Angeles. Shivers had bolted the party, and he led Texas in a Democrats for Eisenhower sweep in 1952. Johnson was regarded as one of the top dark horse candidates for the Democratic nomination for president in 1956, but he was not an announced candidate. The convention chose Adlai Stevenson in 1956 as its standard bearer. It chose Senator Estes Kefauver, who himself died only 2 months ago, as the vice presidential candidate, and Kefauver beat Senator Kennedy for the vice presidential nomination in the last minutes of a hair-raising ballot in the Democratic convention in 56. In 1957, Senator Johnson and the majority leader of the Senate piloted through the Senate the first civil rights bill in more than 80 years. 3 years later, he beat down a Southern filibuster in order to get another such measure passed. In between those two events, he promoted a change in Senate rules that made it easier to cut off debate. And during the past year, one of the principal objectives of President Kennedy was to pass another and even broader civil rights bill, a bill which has passed the Judiciary Committee of the House of Representatives, but so far has shown little sign of actually coming to the floor for passage. It'll be interesting to see what President Johnson does about that bill. There was a time during the civil rights debate 3 years ago when it looked as if Senator Johnson might lose a sizable chunk of the South's 352 presidential nominating ballots if he saw the nomination that year. Many colleagues in the Senate had criticized him for bringing the measure up, accusing him of turning against the South. But Johnson insisted the bill that he was engineering was a moderate, reasonable voting rights measure. The South was won over to his way of thinking, and soon it was strongly behind his candidacy. After he lost the Democratic presidential nomination, Senator Kennedy immediately asked him to take the vice presidential nomination, which he did.
Dallas, you know, I've been somewhat curious at the strange lack of any information on the suspect or suspects who have been picked up in connection with the assassination. We've been told that Fort Worth police are questioning one young man in connection with the assassination, and the Dallas police are holding another in connection with the shooting of a Dallas policeman near the same area this afternoon. But beyond that, very little has been announced as to what is happening.
It's a very peculiar circumstance. We did hear a while ago that the building where the fatal shots were fired had been surrounded by police, but there's been no actual announcement that anyone was arrested in that building.
That is right. There's also the amazingly accurate marksmanship of the assassin, who, if he did, as apparently he did, shoot from the fifth or sixth floor of this building, killed the president apparently with one bullet. He actually, the doctors say, apparently was hit twice, but it was the first bullet that made at least two wounds. And the doctors who treated him say that the president lost consciousness as soon as he was hit and never revived. And they said they never had any hope of saving his life. He was hit about 1:25 Eastern Time, and he died just 35 minutes later. This is amazing accuracy for an assassin.
Especially at a moving target.
Yes, indeed. And he fired 3 shots, so far as anybody has been able to tell, and he hit Governor Connally twice and President Kennedy once or twice.
Well, obviously, he's a marksman and a sharpshooter, whoever he is. But it is amazing, as you say. Apparently, the first shot was directed at the president. That seems to have been the gist of what eyewitnesses have said, when the first shot was fired, the president was hit, and then the second, probably the third shots were fired at the governor.
There was that strange series of wounds suffered by the governor from one of the bullets, as the doctors have reported, that the one bullet hit him in the chest, breaking at least one or more ribs, then tore a wound into his thigh, and finally ended up injuring his wrist, which was a highly volatile bullet to go that far before it finally stopped.
Obviously, it was a well-planned assassination. It wasn't any spur-of-the-moment affair. When you think back to the assassination attempt on President-elect Roosevelt in 1933, this man was simply waiting in the crowd, hoping to get a chance at Franklin Roosevelt. And when the president came along with Mayor Cermak of Chicago, he simply opened fire on him, and it was... Apparently, he wasn't in any position to wait carefully, as this man obviously did today in Dallas, Texas. And now we're going to switch again to Western Europe, and we'll hear once more from CBS News correspondent Daniel Shore in Bonn.
Chancellor Ludwig Erhard has just stepped off the train coming from Paris. He wouldn't say anything at the station. Grim face, he walked to his car and drove directly to the radio station, where he has recorded a short statement that will be on German radio in about 10 minutes from now. By the courtesy of West German Radio, we are able to provide you first with Chancellor Erhard's statement, and here it is.
Meine verehrten Hörerinnen und Hörer,
my honored hearers,
wir alle haben John F. Kennedy verloren.
We have all lost President
Worte
Kennedy.
Können in dieser Stunde nicht ausdrücken, was wir alle an Schmerz und Trauer empfinden.
Words cannot now express our pain and sadness.
Verneigen wir uns vor dem Toten.
We mourn
for the death. Der westlichen Welt, Freiheit und Menschenwürde,
who represented for the whole Western world humanity and human dignity.
Er war ein Freund und ein treuer Verbündeter des deutschen Volkes.
He was a friend and a loyal ally.
Unerschrockenheit und Standhaftigkeit, gerade in schweren Stunden, viel verdankt. Sein Besuch in Deutschland und besonders in Berlin bleibt unvergessen.
His visit to Germany and especially to Berlin remains unforgettable.
Trauern mit der amerikanischen Nation die ganze freie Welt und alle
the whole free world joins in mourning for him.
Seiner Frau